Healthcare Today with Dr. Lewis Myers, a weekly exploration of health and wellness topics affecting Vermonters. Brought to you in part by Westview Meadows and the Gary Residence, retirement living the way it's meant to be. Age Well Vermont, the leading experts and advocates for older adults in northwestern Vermont. Northfield Pharmacy, pharmacy care with a personalized hometown touch. Northfieldpharmacy.com. And Kinney Drugs and KinneyDrugs.com, employee-owned and locally committed. Your participation is encouraged. Call with your questions, 244-1777 or 877-291-8255.
Good afternoon and welcome to Healthcare Today. Very chilly afternoon here in the studio in Waterbury. It's about 4 degrees, but this is February, of course. February has also been designated as Heart Month, and since we're only 2 days away from Valentine's Day, I thought this would be a very good time to discuss heart and heart disease. Specifically today, we are going to look at women's heart health. Until fairly recently, women's cardiac disease was diagnosed and treated in the same way as men's. We are now learning that there are significant differences, and we have two cardiologists today who will discuss this with us. They both work in respective women's cardiac divisions in their institutions. Also today, we have Miss Alice Rader from Adamstown, Maryland, who is going to share with us some of her experiences as a heart attack survivor. I want to let you know that our phones are open this hour. You can call us if you have any questions or if you've had some heart problems of your own. We're at 802-244-1777. That's 802-244-1777. Or you can text a question at 802-585-3036. So I'm going to introduce our two cardiologists in a moment, but I want to start with Miss Rader, and by disclaimer, I will say that she is a very long-time dear friend of mine, and we were working in, Miss Rader is a registered nurse, probably one of the most energetic people I've ever met. Her walking pace is equivalent to what most people would jog or run. We were working in the same hospital many years ago, and she was quite young then, and she had a cardiac event. And I'm going to welcome her now and let her tell us about that. Alice Rader, hello.
Hi there, Lois. How are you?
I'm doing well. So as I said, we were working at a hospital in Washington, D.C. at the time, and you were how old, if I may ask?
I was 32 years old.
Tell us about that day. Did you have any awareness that anything was wrong with your heart leading up to that, first of all?
I had no awareness at all, no family history, no risk factors, nothing.
And what tell us about the day that you had a heart attack.
Okay, well, can I tell you a little about what led up to it? Well, what happened was I'd been having chest pain when I was playing racquetball. I was an avid racquetball player, and I ignored it. Just chest pain. I wasn't sweating. I wasn't held it on my chest. So I kept ignoring it. My husband and I kept ignoring it. So then finally I called because I was having pain right behind my breath. And I was like, well, my heart's back there. Let me make an appointment with a cardiologist. So they gave me an appointment a week later. So I had taken the trash up to, they think this is when it might have happened. I dragged the trash up to the top of the hill. Trash day, and I got really bad chest pain. And all I kept thinking of is, if I call 911, who's going to take care of my 7-year-old and my 4-year-old child? Not what's going to happen if I die. So I didn't do anything. I called my husband. Still didn't do anything. I go to work. I walk up 7 flights of steps. I get chest pain. That night I had chest pain at rest. I was up during the night. I called the office of the cardiologist. They said, come in now. Or they gave me an appointment in the afternoon. So, of course, I drove myself in because we had 2 little kids. And I had chest pain on the way in. Ended up driving myself to my hospital. And the EKG was abnormal. And they did a cardiac cath at my hospital. The next morning, they found out I had a 90% blockage of my major artery. They sent me over to Washington Hospital Center. And I was supposed to have angioplasty the next day, which is where they're going to open it up. I didn't make it. I didn't make it that long. I was having a heart attack that night, a second one. and they had to go in emergently and open me up.
That was done at your the hospital, initial hospital, correct?
The initial hospital, they did a cath. They did a cardiac cath to see what happened. And then they transferred me, because they didn't do angioplasty at my hospital, so they transferred me over to Washington Hospital Center, where they did the cardiac cath.
Washington Hospital Center is a 600-bed hospital in Washington, which was known for its interventional cardiology care. So when you got there and they did the catheterization at Washington Hospital Center, were they able to intervene and help?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
And and tell us about after that. How long were you in the hospital?
I was in the hospital. I was in the ICU for a couple days, and I was down. I don't remember. It was like a couple days, and maybe 3-4 days I was in the hospital. And then I went home.
So here you are, 32 years old, married with two young children. You've just had a major heart attack. What were you thinking at that point when you went home? What was going through your mind?
Well, my biggest problem was mentally. Physically, they went in and they, you know, it was like a million to one. I mean, physically fit, top physical shape in my life. I didn't smoke. I didn't have any risk factors at all. So for me to have a heart attack was like a gazillion to one. So to have a reocclusion where it would close down again was like 30%. Well, to me, that was 100%. Percentages meant nothing to me after that. And so my biggest fear was I was going to die. And this happened in August. I was getting all my Christmas gifts together for my children because I thought I was going to be dead by Christmas.
Mm.
And that was the absolute hardest thing for me was the mental impact. I got very depressed, even though I was a psychiatric nurse, tried to deny it. You know, hey, my heart's okay. I'm okay. And I wasn't okay. And it's just so difficult, especially being, you know, being a woman. They gave me an appointment a week later after I was having chest pain. I wasn't that doctor's patient. We talked about that. And he said, yeah, that's been addressed. That will never happen again. But, you know, they don't think a young woman, 32, you know, who thought? Nobody thought. So and I would encourage anybody who has something like that to get some help because the depression was horrible. I mean, I functioned, but once I went on an antidepressant, you know, I was like a new person. It was just
Now there is also cardiac rehab, which at least these days, and I'm not sure if it was as in vogue then, but certainly these days people often are sent to cardiac rehab. Did you end up going to cardiac rehab at some point?
I did, both times. The first time when I was 32, I'm in with a bunch of grandmas, okay, grandparents, grandfathers, and I'm a young mom with kids in school. So when there was a snow day, if they still had cardiac rehab, but schools are out, I'm scrambling to figure out what I'm going to do where everybody else in there is retired. So I felt very, very out of place. I went to it. I went through it. They kept calling it a fluke because they couldn't figure out why I had it. So I'm thinking, okay, it's a fluke. It's a fluke. You know, I took it seriously. I got over the depression, and then it was like, okay, it was a fluke. I'm okay.
Did you feel as a woman that a patient that you were treated differently than if you had been a male patient?
I didn't really go at it at that angle at that time. What I felt at that time was you hear these, they had these commercials on, you know, boom, boom, boom. If you feel this way or that way, you might be having a heart attack. And my daughter's looking at me saying, oh, Mom, yeah, you know, she's four. Oh, Mom, that's what you had. Isn't it? Like it was a common cold. It was just pain. It was nothing else. It didn't go down my arm. When I was having it the second time in the hospital, it was going down my left arm. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm in serious trouble here. But all I had was pain, and I denied it. I'm a nurse. I'm an RN, and I denied it. And when people say, oh, somebody went through this and, oh, they didn't have any heart issues, I bet they did because denial kills. It just, and when I called in, now that was with the staff there, you know, nobody, I called my best friend who was an ICU nurse and she was like, oh yeah, you're healthy. It's not blah, 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 blah. And she's an ICU nurse. So I guess in that respect, but I think it to me, I was thinking more my age rather than it maybe in a female, though my symptoms were different. You know,
right.
I've learned that as I go along that it's different than what a lot of people have.
Now, you mentioned that you had a second heart attack. When was that?
Yeah, second heart attack. Because, you know, this was a fluke, so I didn't have heart disease. I mean, I took a surgery for a while, and my cardiologist said, yeah, you should go on a, cholesterol lowering. I was like, yeah, no, you know. Well, yeah, they're recommending it, but mine was a fluke. They kept calling it a fluke. So anyhow, I bebopped along 18 years later at age 50, another heart attack, okay? Still denial. And when I turn 50, I get on the treadmill. I'm going to get in shape because I'm 50. I get chest pain, classic. Exercise, chest pain, classic cardiac signs. Did I do anything about it? No, I got off the treadmill. My cardiologist was, 35 miles away down in D.C., and I'm thinking, oh, when am I going to be able to go see him in the traffic and when I'm working? And, blah, 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 blah. And a month later, my daughter had come home from college. We're sitting there eating. I'm eating a steak sandwich. This is when I became vegetarian. Eat a steak sandwich, severe chest pain. I'm like, you got to get me to the hospital. And I was having another one.
Was it the same vessels, or did you have a more?
I had three vessels. The first time I had the LAD. The second time I had first and second diagonal, and I had three. And that was the other thing that was so weird is I only had one artery the first go around. So I had three arteries. They helicoptered me down to Marshall Hospital Center again, and then they put stents in. And then that was the time that it was like a slap in the face. I'm going to die young if I don't do something serious about this. This is severe heart disease. This isn't just a fluke. This is major, major, major.
So what did you do?
So I decided I had to figure out what was going on, and I also needed a cardiologist in Frederick, Maryland, which is close to me because I would have gone right in. So I got a cardiologist up in Frederick, and my original cardiologist had suggested Cleveland Clinic. I want you to go to Cleveland Clinic. I want you to have a consult. My husband and I drove up there, and I had a lengthy consult up at Cleveland Clinic.
And what did they say at Cleveland Clinic?
So Cleveland Clinic, they told me I need to be on, I'm a little thing. I'm not very big, but they put me on 80 milligrams of Lipitor. Told me, the whole diet thing, the whole exercise, I had all that down. One thing I didn't have down second go around was the stress because there was work stress going on. I was basically doing two different jobs if I cut back to part-time. And I was told that watch the LDL, knock the socks off the LDL and keep it as low as possible. And most people, I don't know, it's below whatever, it's below 100-something or whatever. And my last one was like 46. It's the lowest I've ever had. So I really took it seriously. I figured if I didn't keep my, stay active, eat well, take my medicine, keep my stress down, I was going to die young.
So you mentioned you also became a vegetarian.
Yeah, I became a vegetarian because I was eating a steak sandwich at the time. That had nothing to do with it. But the second heart attack, I was eating a steak sandwich, and I was like, yep, knocking it all out. I mean, I put myself on a 20-gram fat myself. Nobody told me. 20-gram fat diet and, the 20 grams fat. And I exercised every single day, and I dropped 18 pounds. Now, I did not need to drop 18 pounds. But I did, and because I thought, oh my gosh, this is so, so serious. And that's what really knocked it into my head, because the first go around, they couldn't explain it. They couldn't say, oh, your family history, or, oh, you smoke, or, oh, you do this or that. They could not explain it. So that's when it really...
Well, I think the good news is that here you are. You are now, those young children you have now have young children of their own. And last I saw, you were sledding down snowy hills. So
yes.
I really appreciate you sharing that. I want you to stay on the line, Alice, if you will, because I do want to get to our cardiologist. And some, if we have callers, they may want to ask you some calls, or you may want to weigh in on what you're hearing from the cardiologist. So thank you. Stay
happy
with us.
Happy to do that. Thank you.
All right. I want to introduce our two cardiologists today. One is indeed from the Cleveland Clinic, which Alice just mentioned. That is Dr. Hiba Wasif. Dr. Wasif got her medical degree from Cairo University in Egypt. She did her internal medicine residency and chief residency at the University of Minnesota, did a cardiology fellowship at Johns Hopkins, in Baltimore and is now doing an interventional fellowship at Brigham and Women's, and which is part of the Harvard system in Boston. She also got an MPH at Hopkins. That's a master's in public health. Our other guest today is Dr. Emily Lau, who is on the phone with us also from Boston. She went to Brown Medical School, did her residency in internal medicine at Brigham and Women's, which again is part of the Harvard system, and is currently a cardiology fellow at Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston. So Dr. Lau and Dr. Wasif, one in Cleveland, one in Boston, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me. And Alice, it seems that we have a connection between Cleveland and Maryland.
Yes, they're about...
It does sound that way. Actually, the hospital
hours.
I work at is part of Johns Hopkins now.
Oh, that's right. So, Dr. Wasif, I'll start with you then. I'd like to ask, as I do many of my professional guests, what drew you to go into cardiology as a profession?
So, I'm frequently asked that question, and I always say I have never thought I was never going to be anything but a cardiologist. I knew I was going to be a doctor all my life. I mean, I grew up in a family where my father was a physician, my mother was a pharmacist. I was my uncles and aunts. A lot of them were in the medical field, and I felt that medicine is certainly my future. And in medical school, from the very beginning, I felt that there's this tie to cardiology, and I could never change that over time. It's the most fascinating organ that controls many other organs in the body. And it's everybody's fear that something is going to happen to them because of their heart.
I think and we'll talk about this more in a minute, but I think what people forget, particularly in this time of COVID and when we hear so much about cancer and other diseases, is that cardiac death is still the number one death in this country for adults. And so you're right, it is rather critical. Dr. Lau, let me ask you the same question. What drew you into cardiology?
Such a great question. Growing up, there was a lot of heart disease on the women's side of my family. My paternal grandmother passed away of a heart attack, and my maternal grandmother, who I was very close to, needed a stent, and she also had a blockage in that same artery that Alice had mentioned earlier. And, you know, my mom has a lot of risk factors for heart disease, so it was something that I saw, and then certainly it was in the women in my family. And so I think for me, it's always been a sort of personal journey. And then when I became a physician, training at the Brigham and Women's Hospital, I just fell in love with cardiology because it's such a wonderful field. It really spans the gamut from prevention, how can we prevent our patients from even ever developing heart disease, all the way to some of the sickest patients who need transplants or what we now have are these mechanical support devices. And so I think that has been a really rewarding experience for me, and and certainly I think the issue of cardiovascular disease in women is still something that we have a lot to do. We have a lot of work to do in that area.
From a professional standpoint, and this question will be open to either of you, women physicians have been underrepresented in the field of cardiology, and I think that's particularly true of interventional cardiology. Do you see that changing?
There's definitely women remain underrepresented in cardiology. And I think there is a lot of effort in different institutions trying to involve more women early on during residency, before even they get into applying for their fellowships. Because I do think that even over the several decades that I've been in practice, I feel that the numbers have certainly gone up, but we still are less than 30% of our the general practicing cardiologists. So we have a long way to go. The numbers of women in medicine has gone up compared to previous decades, but in cardiology we remain behind, and it will take a lot of effort from the institutions to change that. I know that here at the Cleveland Clinic, our leadership has taken specific interest in trying to encourage residents during the residency program to meet with us and discuss their future plans and have mentors and to guide them through the process and discuss with them what were the limitations and what were the difficulties and how to overcome them. And I think having mentorship very early on in your career, especially if you have the desire to go into this field, is very important.
There's no question that it is a tough training. As many pathways in medicine are tough, but cardiology is tough because it's several years after residency. You're on call frequently, and as one of you mentioned, you're dealing with very, very often very, very sick, critically ill patients. And patients don't just get sick during the day; they get sick in the middle of the night, and you often have to come in the hospital, or you're already there.
But as Emily mentioned, cardiology is very broad. I mean, there are many, many aspects of it. Yes, you are dealing with sick patients, but there are also, within the cardiology field, there are some of us that take care of the sickest patient, and then there are some of us that work more on the outpatient setting and prevention, for example, where they may not be dealing with as sick of a patient, but yet their impact is quite incredible from education and prevention of cardiovascular disease. So there is a very broad spectrum of what one can do within cardiology. It's not always the sickest patient.
Dr. Lau, let me ask you, both of you work in what are now divisions of women's cardiac health. Is that a new movement or a new change? How long has your division been up and running?
At the Massachusetts General Hospital, we've been very lucky to have a dedicated women's heart center for almost two decades now. And it certainly continues to be one of the few centers across the nation. It's definitely picking up steam as a specialty. We are increasingly recognizing that there truly are biologic sex differences that contribute to cardiovascular disease that make women's heart disease different than men's heart disease. But also, I think the importance of recognizing that heart disease even exists in women for such a long time. Heart disease is really conceived of as a man's disease. And so I think that increasingly the cardiology specialty, as well as just general medicine and overall, is recognizing this important need.
If a woman goes in, becomes a patient at the women's division there at the Brigham, or Mass General, excuse me, would she notice a difference just in terms of overall culture there or how it feels to be there as opposed to if she was in a more general or cardiology unit?
Well, I think we're very fortunate at Mass General where not only are the practitioners who work within the Women's Heart Center very aware of the importance of women's cardiovascular health, but this is something that permeates the culture of the entire division. And that's, I think, a testament to the many women pioneers before me. But certainly if a patient were to be referred to our Women's Cardiovascular Center, there's a big push to really bring evidence-based therapies that are sex-specific to women. And I think that there's also an opportunity for women we have focus groups, we have a network of resources that are available to our female patients that they otherwise may not have known about.
When you hear Alice's story, for example, and hers was not just gender, but also age, that she ended up in a cardiac rehab with people who are much, much older than her at that point. Does that ring true? How does that sound?
I think it rings true even to this day. Certainly that has been a big push from our cardiac rehab center, which is a phenomenal resource for all of our patients. But even today, the majority of heart attack survivors are older. And that's not to say that, of course, patients, Alice, cannot experience heart attacks at a much younger age. But the majority of patients who do end up getting enrolled in cardiac rehab are older. But it's important to recognize that Alice was extremely healthy before she had her first diagnosis of a heart attack. And so doing the same cardiac rehab regimen as another patient who might be 75 years old is not going to give her the same benefit. So we've really recognized the importance of tailoring our cardiac rehab programs to each individual patient. We have a number of young women patients who have had heart attacks who come through our Women's Heart Health Center. And when we work with our cardiac rehab centers, we emphasize the importance of bringing the exercise regimen really to their level, because the point is not to hit this. The metrics are different for each patient, and it's so important that cardiac rehab and preventive strategies are personalized.
She also mentioned the depression she experienced, which is real, whether it's men or women, I would imagine, after a heart attack.
That is an overlooked area of cardiovascular disease. I think we seldom think of the emotional impact and the life-changing experiences that this occurs to patients afterwards. Obviously, with cardiac rehab, there's a lot of counseling and screening for depression, but I do think that that's an area where certainly there may be a lot of room for improvement in addressing the needs that occur after the heart attack. And I think it's important for us as cardiologists when we see patients after their MI in clinics, and I'm not involved in cardiac rehab. Right. I see patients mostly in the clinic.
Dr. Ross, if we're going to be back, we have to take a break right now. Please stay with us. We're going to be back in 2 minutes. We're back for the second half of Healthcare Today, talking with cardiologist Dr. Emily Lau and Dr. Hiba Wasif and Alice Rader, who is in Maryland. Again, our phone number is 802-244-1777 and text 802-585-3036. So Dr. Lau and Dr. Wasif, I'm going to sort of go back and forth and ask you some specific questions about women's heart health, which is our topic today. First, a big difference between women is that they go, at least as far as we know, they go through menopause. And while men may go through some phase of it, but it's very clear that women do go through menopause. Is heart disease different in the premenopausal women, such as Alice was when she had her heart attack, and a postmenopausal? Dr. Lau, let me start with you.
This is the age-old question, certainly, that us as female cardiology specialists continue to contend with. We do see that heart disease, particularly coronary artery disease, which is essentially blockages in the arteries that supply the heart, rises precipitously after menopause. And that, you know, as we know, that younger women actually do have less heart disease compared with men until they hit menopause, and actually as they continue to move past the menopausal transition, the rates of heart disease climb quite steeply in women, and sometimes even surpass that of men. Now, the question, of course, is why is this? So there was a lot of work done by the Women's Health Initiative a few decades ago looking at the relationship of estrogen, because we think we know that during menopause that there's a decrease in estrogen levels in women. So we were interested in understanding the association of estrogen with heart disease. And there were a number of observational studies that showed that giving estrogen replacement in the form of hormone therapy actually improved cardiovascular outcomes. And so for a very long period of time, many of our mothers may remember that everybody was on hormone therapy, primarily for the prevention of heart disease. And that was all debunked in the 90s when a number of randomized trials, so these are trials that we consider to be the gold standard in medicine. They can really help us determine the question of whether or not there's cause and effect. So there were a number of randomized trials that essentially we gave hormone therapy to one group of women. We did not give hormone therapy to another group of women. It was completely blinded. And we saw that not only did hormone therapy not reduce cardiovascular disease, there was actually a signal for harm. And so ever since then, we've seen a complete drop in the prescriptions of hormone therapy for women. And now at this point, hormone therapy is really reserved for women who are experiencing really severe hot flashes, and largely for symptomatic treatment of menopause. So the question, of course, remains unanswered. You know, we know that heart disease rises significantly after menopause. We know that women, premenopausal women, do not seem to have the same rates of heart disease compared with men, and yet they catch up pretty quickly after menopause, yet giving back estrogen doesn't seem to be the answer. And I think investigators like the ones at Mass General and Cleveland Clinic and other places around the world have recognized that the story is probably much more complicated. There are implications of inflammation. Estrogen deficiency is just one part of that. And we're really, really trying to get to the bottom of this.
I think one of the take-home lesson there is that...
There's still much work to be done.
Yes, and the take-home lesson there is that these randomized trials are so important in whatever field of medicine we're looking at. Dr. Wassef, can you briefly, for the audience, explain what are the major and minor risk factors for heart disease?
Of course. I actually want to just follow up on what Emily was saying and just talking about the prevalence of heart disease. I mean, we always think of it of a menopausal woman, and that's where most heart attacks happen. But I think what we have been noticing over the last few decades, that younger women, and what we talk about younger women, the definition changes. There are some studies looking at women less than 65 years of age, and then there are other studies looking at women between the age of 35, which was closer to the age where Alice had her heart attack, and the age of 54, which is just around menopause. And there have been increasing trends of women having heart attacks during that period.
Why do we think that is?
So, I mean, there are several explanations to why these trends are. I mean, the risk factors, and we were just about to talk about risk factors, that we're seeing the obesity epidemic, which is one of the risk factors for cardiovascular disease. The obesity prevalence in the United States is approaching almost 40%.
Did you say obesity? Did you say obesity? I wasn't sure.
Obesity.
Yes, okay.
So we're approaching almost 40% of the population are defined as obese. They're mostly, I shouldn't say, but the prevalence of obesity in women is higher than that of men. So if 36% of men are obese, 40% of women are obese. So I think we're seeing these trends, and with obesity, you're having other risk factors taking play into the risk factors for cardiovascular disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, and obviously, though there have been a trend to reduce smoking over the last few decades, there is a rise in the use of the electronic cigarettes over the last few years, which also carries risks of cardiovascular disease. The other risk factors that we are also need to be mindful that are very specific to women are immunologic disorders, connective tissue disorders, where the majority of patients affected with them are women. And to be mindful of that, there's a trend within cardiology to recognize this particular population, and there's a subspecialty now where people are talking about mentioning the cardiorheumatology.
You're talking about conditions like lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, and things like that, yeah.
Exactly, the cardiorheumatology, because it's a very special population that is at increased risk for cardiovascular disease that had not garnered attention in the past. And actually, we are actively working on having a clinic here at the Cleveland Clinic for cardiorheumatology. So the other risk factors also include like preeclampsia, and gestational diabetes, and all these are all risk factors that are very unique to women.
What about ethnic differences? Of course, you're in Cleveland, which has a multicultural city. Are certain racial or ethnic groups more prone to having women having heart disease?
I think what we're seeing is obviously African American women. The prevalence of the risk factors is much higher in them, particularly hypertension. And it's not just the prevalence of disease, but also the management and treatment and follow-up, which are all aspects of care that are important and will reduce your risk. So there are definitely racial differences, and we are recognizing that. And I want to go back to an important point apart from the risk factors. It's just the awareness. Even the awareness of cardiovascular disease and that women are prone to cardiovascular disease as well as men are, that awareness is much less in the African American community. On average in the population, it's about 50%. So half of women are not aware that cardiovascular, that they are at risk for heart attacks, and it's even less in African American communities.
So educating the public may actually end up saving lives. Dr. Lau, let me ask you this. Does a heart attack or heart disease in women, symptom in terms of their symptoms, do they present differently than men?
So we have garnered a lot of data in this area, and I would say the first most important message is that women still, the most common symptom for women experiencing a heart attack is still chest pain. And so it's important, I think, that audience members walk away from today's show knowing that if you do experience chest pain, that is an important symptom not to ignore. Now, we also know that women do present with more what we consider atypical symptoms. And I don't like the word atypical because they're atypical for who? They're probably atypical for men, but they're quite typical for women. So symptoms such as shortness of breath, nausea, vomiting, fatigue, those can also be common presenting symptoms for women. However, even after looking at large databases of women, chest pain in a woman, especially at rest, is not something to be ignored.
In terms of the testing, whether it's echocardiograms, stress tests, or even cardiac casts, is there a difference between men and women in terms of their effectiveness in identifying problems?
There are differences, and I'll speak to a few tests that we use quite commonly, in particular for the diagnosis of coronary artery disease. So stress tests, we know, they take many different forms, but we know in pretty much every type of form that they are often less accurate and specific for the diagnosis in women for a number of reasons. Women, breasts can sometimes get in the way of imaging. We know that the EKG is less diagnostic in women. And for all those reasons, I think it's really important that we use testing as really an adjunct for our clinical impression of the patient. The same is true of ultrasounds of the heart or echocardiograms. There's one modality that has started to gain a lot of interest, which is the cardiac PET scan, which is really like a fancy stress test. And that has been a real boon for women's cardiovascular health. One, because I think that it is a more accurate test in women, but it also provides additional information, including information about microvascular disease, which is a much more common entity that we see in women. So when we talk about coronary artery disease or blockages in the arteries, we typically think of the three big arteries, but we are increasingly learning that women also have disease in some of the smaller arteries that we don't see on a cardiac cath, and a cardiac PET is a really great diagnostic tool to help us make diagnosis of microvascular disease.
And you mentioned, and I'll go to Dr. Wasif on this question, that women's arteries, coronary arteries, may be smaller than men's. Dr. Wasif, does that present a special challenge when you're doing cardiac catheterizations and trying to put stents in and open up these vessels?
So I don't do catheterization okay. or stents, but in general, I can't speak specifically for that point, but yes, in general, and also not just in women, also certain populations have smaller arteries as well. So theoretically, yes, and in terms of revascularization as well, whether you have a target for when you have bypass surgery, would you know, that may represent a challenge. But what I would like to go back to is what Emily was mentioning about the imaging study, and when she mentioned microvascular disease, because what happens quite often and is that women get tested, even having catheterization, they look at their coronary arteries, and the coronary arteries look clean, and what they are being told is that they are free of disease and their symptoms are non-cardiac in symptoms, which is not true, and it's a very, very important to recognize this entity of microvascular disease that's quite prevalent in women, where PET imaging is becoming the tool to recognize this. There's also other testings in the cath lab that you can utilize and use to diagnose this entity, but it's recognizing that the symptoms, if they sound anginal and the cath is negative, doesn't mean that the woman doesn't have underlying coronary artery disease. It's just it's at the level of the small blood vessels, and that's a booming area of cardiology where we still are trying to understand the outcomes and how to manage patients with microvascular disease.
Let me just ask a quick question of either of you. Aspirin costs pennies a tablet. Does it help prevent heart? We know that it's important after you've had a heart attack, but is it important for prevention of first heart attacks or heart disease?
That's a very good question. I think in last decade, we were out saying, yes, aspirin is very cheap, it's harmless, everybody should be on aspirin once you hit age 40 or 50. And what we've recognized is that there is obviously the risk of bleeding that goes along with aspirin, so it is important to think about aspirin in the context of risk. So if populations at risk, for example, diabetic patients, there may warrant aspirin therapy, or patients who have high calcium scores on their CAT scans, they may warrant aspirin therapy, but not aspirin is not for everyone.
Dr. Lau, why is diabetes such a risk factor for heart disease?
Diabetes is one of the most the major health issues that we're facing today, and we actually consider diabetes to be equivalent to somebody, like the risk of diabetes is equivalent to somebody who's actually had a heart attack. And the reason is that diabetes actually causes a lot of complications, both in the big and small arteries that supply the heart as well as the rest of the body. And for that reason, we take patients with diabetes very seriously. We are very aggressive with risk factor modification. We want to make sure our patients with diabetes have their diabetes well controlled, but not just their sugars. We want to make sure their blood pressure is controlled, their lipids, their cholesterol is well controlled, that they're exercising and eating the right diet, because the risk of heart disease is just so high in this population.
Mm-hmm. So each, Dr. Wasif in Cleveland and Dr. Lau in Boston, I'm sure you're both seeing a lot of COVID in your cities as we are across the country. Are there specific ways in which this COVID coronavirus appears to affect the heart, or is it more generally the generalized inflammation in the entire body that's a problem?
So I think it not just affects the heart. The whole pandemic has impacted how people have reacted to it. We've seen a drop in heart attacks over particularly at the beginning of the epidemic. There was a study that looked at 9 medical centers across the U.S. at the beginning of the pandemic, and there was a drop of activation of cath labs down 40%. And it's not because patients were having less heart attacks. It was because they were not coming to the hospitals because of fear of COVID.
Right. So someone like Alice, who was having definite symptoms last March or April in the initial pandemic hit, might have stayed away from the hospital because she was afraid of getting COVID, and then she would have been at home having something and potentially even worse.
There was a recent study that also looked at trends of mortality, people dying within in the year 2020 compared to 2019, and there was an uptake. There was almost an 11% increase of death from cardiovascular disease compared to 2019, which is a reflection of all these failed activation of the cath lab. So it's not just the effect of COVID on the heart, but what the COVID pandemic has done to patients and people coming to hospitals to get their necessary treatment. The Cleveland Clinic had conducted a survey recently, and it found that about 50% of the responders to that survey, even though they had symptoms like what Alice was describing, they failed to show up to a hospital or seek medical attention. And even people who have cardiovascular disease, they also failed to contact their doctor or show up to a hospital because of fear of COVID.
So the take-home message here is, please, people out there, if you're having chest pain or any of the symptoms that you think potentially, which they mention shortness of breath, unusual nausea or lightheadedness, fainting, please don't hesitate to go to the hospital if you feel that this is a new symptom.
I want to go back to...
Yeah, briefly, and then I want to finish with Ms. Rader, but go ahead.
I will just mention a couple of points. Yes, COVID does affect, as a virus, it does affect the heart. It can weaken the heart muscle, either with a stress, what we call stress cardiomyopathy, or an actual inflammation of the heart muscle.
Well, we're going to be continuing to learn from this virus. Alice, I want to return to you for the last couple of minutes that we have. Do you have a you've told us some about your story. Obviously, you're doing very well now, but do you have a message out there for women, anything you want to share with them in terms of heart disease?
Well, like I was saying earlier, denial is such a powerful force, and someone who's in the medical field as I, with classic symptoms, chest pain, people don't want to believe it's your heart. And it can, I was kind of rare as far as my age and all that, but, just don't ignore it. That's my big thing, is just don't ignore it. And I'm putting my, who's going to take care of my kids if an ambulance comes? Well, what's going to happen if I die and they're home by themselves, Mm-hmm. We need to take care of ourselves first, or we cannot take care of other people. And I kind of lost sight of that. And that would be my takeaway with it, is people are just, if you know somebody who's having chest pain. I mean, best friend ICU nurse, if she didn't think I was having any kind of cardiac issue, MI, heart attack, and it tends to be minimized, So, and people will say to me, oh, well, you're the only one here who has heart disease. And my response is, I'm the only one known to have heart disease. I know I have it. Once you know you have it, you can do something about it. But if you don't get the help and recognize symptoms and get in, even if you're okay, my other fear was I was a psychiatric nurse. I mean, I was having chest pain at rest. I drove home that night. Mm-hmm. Okay, I didn't go to the emergency room because I didn't want people there thinking I was nuts.
Well,
I have a heart attack?
I am so glad that you have done as well as you have, of course.
Me too.
And I want to thank our guest.
You had mentioned also,
well, Dr. Wassef, we're going to have to end.
Give you an appointment very late.
Yeah.
And that's the other issue. I think there also we need to educate.
We do.
Primary care providers.
Dr. Wassef, I have to break because they're going to cut us off. But I want to thank you and Dr. Lau. You've been terrific. We've only scratched the surface. I want to encourage everyone to take good care of your hearts. Join us next week. We're going to talk about long-term care, which includes nursing homes and assisted livings, and the particular challenges they've been facing during this past year with COVID and the challenges they face going forward. Talk to you next week. Thanks.
Healthcare Today with Dr. Lewis Myers, brought to you in part by AgeWell Vermont, the leading experts and advocates for older adults in northwestern Vermont. Westview Meadows and the Gary Residence, retirement living the way it's meant to be. Kinney Drugs and KinneyDrugs.com, employee owned and locally committed. And Northfield Pharmacy, pharmacy care with a personalized hometown touch. NorthfieldPharmacy.com.
The music for this program was written and produced by Armin Bayajian.